The following program is brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors, and the views expressed may not necessarily reflect the views of this station.
Answering your top financial questions for the past 20 years, it's Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean. Thanks for joining us.
On Halloween. This is a Halloween weekend right now. Of course, if you're listening to it on radio, it's Halloween. If it's a podcast, we're not sure which day you're listening to. But
if we knew that.
It is Halloween. As my father would say to me, the Halloween is just becoming way too commercialized. It's losing the meaning of the season, which I don't really know what that meant. I think he was trying to be humorous. In any case. This is a financial program. Both myself and my co-host here, we're both financial advisors. We spend our weekdays helping people like yourself, making wise choices with their money, and we come here on the weekends to be your financial advisors on the air. So whether you work with advisors now or you're just getting started or whatever the case may be, we want you to consider this program another place for valuable information and for some direction and all that kind of stuff.
You can call in and ask any question you'd like regarding finances.
Just about any question you'd like.
So are you going out for Halloween? Are you dressing up?
I'm somehow, by the way, if you want to join the program.
That's an important part of the show. Sidetracked already. We're 4 minutes in.
We're not four, like a minute.
That's a new personal best.
to join the program, a question regarding anything to do with a financial matter, any sort of financial planning issue you're concerned with, maybe someone's trying to pitch you some product and you want to know if it's the right thing to do. Whether it has to do with your 401k or insurances or taxes, retirement, join the program. It's 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, it's 1-888-242-6766. And it's a good chance we'll get you on if we'd like the question.
Yeah, and if we don't?
Most of the time.
Yes.
If you're a good person and have a good question.
And actually, my favorite part of the show is actually the questions.
Is it?
Yeah.
I like hearing myself talk, mostly.
You?
No. So it is Halloween.
Before we get to the financial plan, are you going to any Halloween parties
Zero this
tonight?
Year. I was out of town last weekend, and there's a friend of ours we started going to their Halloween party. When my daughter was in first grade, she is now a sophomore in college.
I think it's run its course.
My wife went. I was out of town. My wife went. She said it was a blast. And this family, they do more decorations.
Oh, I know who you're talking about.
Than anyone I've ever known or known of. They have storage units just for their decor for Halloween, for Christmas. What else do you do? I don't know. But. They're life-size mummies in the house and stuff. She took like bell peppers and carved. They look like jack-o'-lanterns. They were the food. Like somehow she cooked them and stuffed them with something. And
sounds like an awful lot of work to me.
A lot of work, but
I did tell my wife. I said, if we are invited to any Halloween parties, tell them we're busy and we cannot come. She said, why? And I said, well, because I went to an Oktoberfest, and that's enough. That's enough.
You wore the Lula, whatever they call stuff. Ludenheimer.
I don't remember what it's called.
Yes.
No, I didn't.
Sorry, Germans, that we can't get that.
I didn't wear all of it. I just wore the shirt and a pair of jeans. My wife bought the whole outfit for me.
We talked about that the other week.
Yeah. Nope. Yeah. So anyway, not going to Halloween parties. If you're listening to the show and you want to invite me, don't bother. Not going.
There you go. Hey, one of the things we were going to talk about during this hour on this program, which is why you want to listen, is what financial assets, mutual funds, stocks, bonds, et cetera, what financial assets should you own inside of a retirement plan and which ones should you own outside of a retirement plan? So if you've got a diversified portfolio, you're heading towards retirement, maybe you're in retirement, and you've got some savings in your 401k and in your IRAs and you have some savings on the outside, are we better off putting those bonds in our IRA, or should we have the bonds on the outside? Should we have the stocks? We'll talk about those
issues.
Or
which one's in your 401k and which one's outside of the 401k?
So we'll talk about those issues during this hour, so you want to make sure you'll be part of that because it'll be riveting.
Oh, I can't wait.
It'll be so exciting, you won't don't believe it. So I mentioned my daughter. There's a financial application to this. So,
oh, well, thank you.
Before I just go off on
We're just not going to hear about Jessica and how she's doing in college?
We're going to hear about Jessica.
Okay.
And I wasn't going to give her name. But there we go. for the stalkers. So it doesn't really matter.
Well, yeah, no one would be able to figure out who your daughter is by spending 3 minutes online.
Correct.
There's no way you'd ever.
Huh? It'd be impossible. Speaking of that, I have we have a mutual friend, Pat, that has a company that does, they find people, and they work with credit agencies to find people. So I was at his office one day.
FindJohnDoe.com.
I was at his office, and he says, well, let me look you up. And he looks me up. He says, here's your sister so-and-so, where she lives. He like knew all about my not only my previous addresses, my extended family, where they all lived. It was kind of freaky.
Oh.
In any case, all that's out there. That's so my daughter's
big
a sophomore in college, and I always like to tease her that she'd be a good financial advisor because she gets angry with me because she says the last thing she wants to do is be a financial advisor. But I actually do think she'd be a good financial advisor. And I've told both my kids that don't think you're going to just grow up and come work for the company store, because that's not how it's going to work. You got to go find your way. And if in fact this is the right fit, then you can come back, because I don't think it's fair to the clients or the co-workers or good for them anyway. So my point is, young person in college, and we're talking. I said that to her again this time when I'm talking on the phone. And she says, "Dad, I just don't care about money. I just don't care much about money." Now, this is as her room and board are paid for by her parents. She has an automobile to drive. She did have a summer job and saved up some money, but
by and large, she wouldn't have purchased that automobile on her summer earnings.
That's correct. And I said, you don't care about money because you have access to money.
Had you
access to money, you would care greatly about money.
And what was her response?
Good point, Dad. I think it's
did
what
she really?
I think she kind of realized that.
Yeah,
but I don't think she's terribly money motivated. I don't think she doesn't. It'll be hard to say.
Yeah, it is. They're all. You've got two. I have four. They're all very, very different. They're all very different.
She's not a good saver, although she manages to have some saved. But one thing that we've noticed is financial advisors, working with people over the years, we've been doing this 20-plus years, the people just have a kind of a natural tendency to either be savers or spenders. I can't think of anybody that I've known a long time that used to have a problem spending and now has a problem saving too much. I haven't met that person. I've seen people that have always never felt... They've always saved a great deal and have never felt comfortable spending much.
Yes, I've seen that.
And I haven't really seen them change to the point where I'm like, whoa, you need to slow down now.
So you've never seen someone that became a spender and then all of a sudden was saving gross amounts of money just because one day their mind changed.
And I haven't seen the opposite either.
That's correct.
And I think it's important for people to kind of understand yourself, both as it's important to understand how you are as an investor. It's easy to kind of look back at your patterns. How did I react during the financial crisis? How did I react the last few months, right? Some of those things. But it's also important to look at, am I one that tends to spend and it's hard for me to save? And if that's you, what you really want to do is organize your life in such a manner so that you won't be tempted to spend as much, so you can have some constraints set aside to begin with, and that your savings going to happen automatically. Have forced savings.
Money comes out of either your paycheck or your checking account. But I couldn't agree more. In the financial plans we do with our clients, bringing them through the 7 personal decision points, is this is what the plan is. Do this and spend everything else. Do this and spend everything else. Right?
Yes.
So if you're 5 years away from retirement, this is what your goal is. This is how much you need to save. Everything else, spend.
And Pat, how common is it when you meet with somebody, they're nearing in retirement, one is totally comfortable, confident about their retirement, they're not really worried about that much, so they're like, hey, we can
no
afford
big
to go
deal,
out.
Yeah.
And the other spouse is freaked out.
Yeah, and normally they're both right to a degree. They're on their way, but I've never seen anyone that both came in that were big spenders that didn't worry about retirement, that were ready for retirement.
You mean oftentimes there's a happy medium somewhere in there.
Yeah. As there is with most relationships.
Matter of fact, I can think of the couples that I've met with over the years that come in and neither one of them are concerned at all about retirement. Usually before they get into the numbers, I'm concerned.
You get a little worried.
And the ones that have said, we've been worried since we're age 12.
Are normally pretty good.
They've got ample amounts of set aside.
And that's actually why the financial planning process actually brings you through. And I tell you, four kids, just you going back to your daughter, they're all different. I have some that you couldn't get 15 cents out of them. And others, they'd give you their last dollar if you asked for it. It just doesn't
give it to you.
They would just give it to you. If you asked them for the last dollar, they'd say, here it is.
You know what bugs me? My son always, there's change piled up in the laundry room. It just piles up. And I'm like,
do you take it?
Yes, I take it. Because that's a value to me.
And he doesn't?
Apparently, it's not a value to him. There's 82 cents there. I want that 82 cents. It's a value. Anyway, we're taking a quick break to join the program. It's 1-888-2-HANSON. 1-888-2-HANSON. When we come back, we'll start taking some calls, and we'll have more financial talk as well. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Wondering if you're on track with your financial matters? Call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON.
Hanson McLean Advisors is dedicated to helping people make wise choices with their money. From the time Scott and Pat started the firm until today, they've been committed to see to it that people arrange their finances in such a manner as to provide some element of financial peace in their lives. All the financial professionals at Hanson McLean Advisors are credentialed and well-versed in areas that range from investments and risk management to taxes and debt reduction. The approach taken by Hanson McLean Advisors is one of financial planning, meaning the advisors take the time with each client to help map out a strategy before they offer any solutions. Their fee-based investment accounts are designed to be transparent and liquid, so you never have to guess what's going on under that hood. There are no commissions when products are changed or when rebalances take place, and there's a high level of communication, keeping you informed and up to date. With offices and meeting locations throughout Northern California, come and see how Hanson McLean Advisors can be a benefit to you. Contact them at 1-888-2-HANSON or at moneymatters.com.
Back to one of the longest-running financial programs. Here's Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean. Thanks for joining us.
Happy Halloween to everybody. And
yes,
I suppose, whatever that means.
I do kind of miss it when the kids were little, when they would all get dressed up and walk around the neighborhood. And then when they were in their teens, where they'd hide in the bushes when the little kids were coming to the door and jump out and...
steal their candy?
No, not steal their candy. Scare them.
I remember my candy got stolen 1 year at Halloween.
Really?
Yes.
That's funny.
I'm still scarred from that.
That's hilarious.
What are you talking about, that's hilarious? The funny. Big kids took my candy.
Little Scott Hanson, what did you do?
I cried, and all the way home, I came home and cried.
How
my mom
old
gave me a
were
big
you?
Hug. I must have been in... like third grade.
Oh, this explains
a
lot.
Third grade.
This explains a lot.
And I think I must have been out by myself or with my sister. I was probably the next block over or something. That was the day when you felt comfortable letting your kids roam. Now you
Naturally.
Now you're, they're 20 and you're falling around everywhere. But the big kids.
They stole your candy?
Yeah. All of it.
All of it. Did you give up and go home, or did you keep trick or treating?
I'm usually pretty good at blocking out all the painful experiences of childhood, but that one is seared in there. Keeps coming to the bubbling up.
How do you know you're blocking out the painful experiences if you can't remember the painful experiences?
Maybe I had an ideal childhood then.
Maybe you did.
Forget all the moves and divorce and stuff. It was idyllic.
Why, Mom, when I go through the pictures, was I always crying?
Okay.
Well, my poor brother, it was a family of five kids. By the last one, no one took any pictures of the family. My parents were... We convinced my youngest brother he was adopted because there were no pictures of him when he was a kid.
I was kid number four.
Yeah.
I can't find any family pictures. I heard they were lost in the flood, and I heard they were lost in the fire. So I don't
know. The flood. Only because the locusts very, very rarely hit California.
Anyway, we better go to the calls here. This is a financial program, Hanson McLean's Money Matters. We're talking to Kumar? How do we pronounce that?
Hi.
Hi. Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Hey. I listened to your show, and then I thought it would be a good idea to explain our situation and see what you guys can advise on.
Perfect.
All right.
That's what we're here for.
Sure. So we are not from here, so we moved here about 6 years ago. So we have, some property back in India, and here, both my wife and I work pretty high on us.
Let me ask you a question. So you moved here 6 years ago. Did you move here? Did you have a job lined up, or did you come here for education, or what brought you here?
Yeah, we found a job when we came, but most people come for graduation and
Right.
then masters and then they find a job. But we both were working in high tech and our companies wanted to move us here.
Got it.
So we just came that way.
Interesting. Okay.
And you came over, what they call it, on an H-1 visa?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, continue on. It's just, I think it's
Sure.
interesting. I'm interested, and I hope our listeners are as well. So go ahead.
Sure. Back in India, we have a couple of properties, pretty high, were currently rented out. We are still holding on to them. Here, we have standard 401k through our employers, and I've also started funding a 529 for our kids.
Okay.
I'm just wondering, is there anything else we can do towards, because the 401k 18,000 standard limit per year is, it's not much in terms of saving up for retirement.
And how
Do you
many
have a couple
children?
of life insurance? We have two.
And how old are they?
Five and two.
And how much money have you are you putting in, or do you have in the 529 plans?
Not much. I just started 2 years ago. I don't remember, but every month I put in around 500 into each account.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. And then you said you have a couple life insurance policies. Tell me about the life insurance policies.
Yeah, those are back in India, so obviously if we retire here, they are not worth too much.
Got it.
Here
And
we don't have life insurance
do
yet,
you have any term insurance for
unfortunately,
your
we haven't.
kids?
On our kids, we have,
No,
insurance
no, no, no.
provided through
Do you have
the.
Yeah, so if you were to if you and your wife were both to be killed today in a car accident, what assets are there for your kids?
So we have a property, pretty high value property, and which is not yet paid off.
Yeah.
But we have insurance through the employer that we sign up for. They do this group insurance,
Yeah,
so
how much time is your
500
salary?
each,
Okay. And what's your
$500,000 each.
family income ballpark?
Everything included, I would say 300.
I would first thing, I'd recommend getting some cheap term insurance. I know that's not what you call it
Okay.
for, but that's what we
Yes.
just it's so inexpensive. And what happens is financial advisors, we sit sometimes across the table from a widow or a widower and try to figure out how to make the finances work when somebody
And I
passes
would
away.
buy $1.5 million on each one of you, both of
Well,
you.
does your wife
Okay.
work as well outside the home?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, we both have the group
Yeah, for half a
insurance
million. So
that
I.
covers death and disability through the employer.
So I
That's
would buy
about.
I'd buy another $1.5 million in term insurance for the both of
Okay.
you. And I would do a living trust. I would do absolutely do a living trust so that we made sure that your children are if something were to happen to both of you, that there would be a guardian that would be that would take care of them. And I wouldn't.
Have you done that? Do you have a will or a trust in place?
No, it has been on my list since 2 years, but I haven't done it yet.
Yeah.
Yeah,
You need a
it's
trust. You absolutely need a
okay.
trust, and you'll name a guardian of the to the children in case something happens to you, and then you'll name someone different than that guardian to watch after the money. So you want most certainly. So this is, it's interesting. Your question is a normal question, which is how do I save more for retirement? And we've answered two of your questions you haven't even asked yet.
And yeah, these are very useful because I have been thinking of those as well.
Yeah,
Okay. And
good.
so, especially if you, when people are younger, you want to start with the basics and work from there. So, you're doing everything right. You're maximizing your 401k. You're putting $500 a month into the 529 plans. The children are 5 and 2.
So now if you want to save some additional dollars for retirement, you've got with the 401k, the benefit of that, you have the tax deferred growth, right? You get a tax deduction for the money that you put in. It grows tax deferred. When you retire and pull the money out, it'll be taxable at that time. In a perfect world, when you land at retirement, whatever that's going to be, at some point in the future when you're saying, I'm not going to work anymore and I want my assets now to provide an income for me. In a perfect world, you have a variety of different things to choose from. So ideally, you get to retirement and have a diversified tax structure in the same way you'd have a diversified investment structure. So you'd have the 401k, which has some tax consequences you pull it out. You might have a
Okay.
Roth if it makes sense at any point in time along the way. It doesn't really right now, but if there's a window that gets created and makes sense to convert some, it's an opportunity in the future. You'd also have some in perhaps an S&P 500 index fund or a total stock market index fund, ETF, or some individual stocks, something that has that's been growing on a tax-deferred basis over those years. You'd also have some money just set aside in probably some cash, and maybe you have some other real estate.
And you would actually frame it so that the day you retired, your primary residence was paid for. So that would be a perfect retirement. So the first thing I would look at is making – do you have IRAs anywhere, or are they all 401ks?
So we are not eligible for IRAs anymore, any tax-deductible IRAs.
That's a tax, yeah,
just because of the income. I do have one from before that's worth about $20,000, I think, and then I just left it alone and it's growing.
Left it in the 401k or you left it in an IRA?
No, actually, at one point I had a position that didn't have a 401k, so I had an IRA that I contributed for 2 years.
Okay. Because you have the IRA, we were going to mention the contributing to non-deductible IRA and then converting it to a Roth.
But Scott, I would actually consider taking that IRA that you have today and converting it to your company's 401k plan.
Uh-huh.
But it didn't start from a 401k plan. It started.
Did it start from a 401k,
no.
Your IRA, or where
no.
did it start from? Oh, it did not.
Mentioned,
okay.
Yeah. Never mind. It was a good planning technique.
I missed that.
How much more do you want to be saving on a monthly basis or an annual basis?
So my motivation is twofold. One is I wanted to do as much tax benefit as possible in terms of investments, which is right now only 401k, I guess. And second is to obviously save as much as possible for retirement.
Yeah.
In today's dollars, if we earn around, you know, $150 or so in retirement, that I think would
you
be
need
good.
A lot of money. Yeah. I totally get it. Obviously.
Who doesn't?
So I think one of the things to look at here is what can we have some tax. So the 401k has some tax favorable attributes to it. What else has some tax favorable attributes? Someone may be trying to sell you a permanent life insurance, like a universal life insurance or a whole life insurance. We would recommend against that. I think there are some tax benefits to it, but the cost inside of it. And what they say is, oh, if you contribute to this, it's going to grow tax deferred. Then at retirement, you can just take a loan against the policy. Here's the thing. Let's say you invest in a total stock market index fund over the years, and you just put money in each month. Has very little in the way of dividends. It's going to grow along with the overall market over the next 20, 30 years until your retirement time. That'll be all tax-deferred capital appreciation. At that time, you have an option. You could sell and pay a capital gain tax at that point. You can also take a loan on that, just like you could on a life insurance policy. So if some life insurance agent gets in front of you and tries pushing a big policy, they're not going to mention the fact that you can take a loan against any asset you have, for that matter. So I would certainly look at, and I probably wouldn't recommend taking a loan. I'm just talking about
you can't take it.
So I would certainly look at investing. I think the second thing I would be doing after maxing out the 401k is just getting a low cost, no load ETF or no load mutual fund or an ETF that has the total stock market index, and just start saving in that. Once you get a decent size there, you can start adding some other funds to it.
And how much cash do you have, money in the bank?
About 100 that we kept aside just for, you know.
Oh, perfect. You're ready. And I assume that you have a 15-year note on your mortgage, something like that, or?
It's actually 30. It's fairly new.
Yeah, and how old are you?
Mortgage.
How old are
36?
You?
36.
Okay.
Oh, you're
then
perfect. Perfect.
30-year mortgage, perfect on that. And then the other thing you could look at is, if you have the appetite for it and want to do it, is investing in real estate, in a rental property or something along those lines.
Don't buy a non-traded REIT, but going out actually and buying direct real estate yourself.
The challenge with it does take a little more work. And even if you have a property management company, there's still additional decisions to make. It's a little more work than just having a passive investment. But that, from a tax benefit, they still have some good tax laws with real estate to help you out. But you're not going to be able to take a tax deduction from it.
Yeah. And that's why I like the idea of buying a low cost ETF or index fund. Total market. You get capital gains treatment on there, very little in terms of dividends coming out to you. And that's what I would do.
Doesn't have to be really complicated. Yeah. It does not have to be complicated.
But most importantly, get the trust done and buy the life insurance.
Okay. And so focus on a tax deferred growth.
That's correct.
In terms of investment.
Yeah, but I would not buy an annuity. See, if you buy it, its very nature, an index fund is going to be quite tax efficient. You'll have a little bit in dividends spent out each year. They're taxed favorably, actually.
And you'll have a little bit of capital gains every year, but most of it's pretty.
Most of it's going to be tax-deferred growth. You're going to find it's going to grow over time. Whether it's a basket of stocks or an index fund, most people aren't great at picking individual stocks, so we would recommend the index fund. And if you do those things, you'll get to retirement and have quite a bit of flexibility because you'll have some in a 401k or IRA that you can pull out, and you'll have some in tax-deferred as well. So hope that was helpful, and I really would be working on the
And I would go to our website, moneymatters.com, and look at the webinar, 7 Personal Decision Points for Kumar. So moneymatters.com.
To give you a thought about what you need to, how much income you need to
replace. The 7 Personal Decision Points for Retirement Planning.
Yeah, because it addresses a couple of these things here. We're going to take a quick break. When we'll come back, we will continue on taking calls and more good finance fun. This is Hanson McLean.
To join the show, call us at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. 1-888-242-6766.
Planning, saving, and transitioning into retirement isn't as easy as it used to be. Interest rates are low, the financial markets are volatile, and pensions aren't what they used to be. Have you saved enough? Will your investments last you until your dying day? Are you on the right track? If you are asking yourself any of these questions, you could really benefit from meeting with the Hanson McLean Financial Advisor. At Hanson McLean Advisors, they use a unique 7 personal decision points process that can help you evaluate what steps you should be considering to keep you on a path to your ideal retirement. A meeting with one of their financial advisors will look at topics such as how much income your investments could produce, how to maximize Social Security benefits, methods to reduce income taxes, and more. So come into one of their Northern California offices to meet with one of their credentialed advisors and see how Hanson McLean Advisors may help get you to the place you want to be financially, the place you need to be financially. Contact Hanson McLean today at 1-888-2-HANSON or visit moneymatters.com. That's moneymatters.com.
Taking the financially complex and making it simple. It's Hanson McLean's Money Matters at 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean. Thanks for joining us. I always say that.
You always say that.
I've got to stop that.
Every time we come back, thanks for joining us.
All right.
But thanks for
Glad you're here.
I'm glad you're here. You know, it's probably fine, though. Thanks for joining us.
It's the nature of... I try to be...
You are grateful.
Thankful and grateful, yes. I try to be.
You would have nothing to do on the weekends if it wasn't for the radio program.
No, I'm grateful to the clients and the people allow us to, you know, it could probably sounds cliche, but it's true. It's absolutely true. So speaking of being grateful.
But it's interesting, in this day and age, you can have a podcast with really no listeners. There are people that, out of their bedrooms, they'll do these podcasts and then distribute them. And it seems to me that oftentimes the only other people that sign up for them are other podcasters. So they have.
Do you have a podcast on the side?
No, I don't.
Oh, I don't know what I would talk about. Yeah, in addition to this.
This is obviously available through a podcast.
Yes, but you're not like Scott's, you know, physical fitness tips on the side or something? Or like when you're running these ultra marathons, you're like musings from Scott and you're like this is what I'm thinking on mile 21. Not that podcast? Doesn't very appealing?
No, I don't think most people would be terribly interested in that. If there's a big market, if it could add tremendous value to someone's life, maybe I'll have a podcast on that.
Okay, well, I appreciate that. But speaking of exercise, my wife and I went for a tandem bicycle ride this week. It's been quite some time since we've...
Your wife gets on the back of a bike that you're riding in the front.
When I first met my wife, I had a tandem bicycle. I used to be a big cyclist when I was in high school in my early years in college. And our first...
Pat, we'll talk about that. I'm sorry.
What's
the trip? The time you rode your bike across the United States.
I tried to. We ran out of money.
In Denver.
In Denver.
I've heard this.
We went through Yellowstone. Anyway, so I was a big bicyclist back in the day. So anyway, so I bought tandem bicycle a while ago, and my wife would go out maybe every 3 months with me. And actually, I think I'm going to rename the bike called the Marriage Test from now on.
I can't imagine. My wife will never get on the back of a bike with me.
She's very good, but it's once every 3 months is probably enough for the marriage.
It didn't bring you guys closer?
So sometimes it
wasn't a great date. It's like, oh, I had such a wonderful time with you today.
That's the deal. Sometimes it's absolutely phenomenal, right? Sometimes it's just great, and sometimes it's not.
Isn't that what it is when you're married to a woman?
I guess that might be.
It's always a mystery to me. Did I say something wrong?
But it's nice because you're exercising. You're that close. You can actually talk in a normal voice. But the problem is that the captain actually has to kind of shout orders like, you know.
Like what?
Well, you coast, right foot up when you're starting. There's a whole series of things. And a lot of it is.
That would not work out well.
And a lot of it's kind of counterintuitive because if you're cruising along and you need to brake, it's a bicycle that's pretty heavy. You got to pretend it like it's a truck. So you're actually braking and pedaling at the same time so you can downshift into a lower gear.
Yes.
And you've got to communicate that. Anyway.
A truck.
Anyway, so hopefully my wife and I will be out on the tandem in another 3 months.
All right. Well, let's go back to calls here. 1-888-2-HANSON to join us here. 1-888-2-HANSON. We're talking with Gary. Gary, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hey, guys. Good talking to you.
Thank you.
Not sure if you want to go solo on that tandem bike, but at least it's a little easier for the command, huh?
That's right. He should go solo. My wife wouldn't get on any bike that I'm on, I got to tell you.
It looks funny, but you get the job done. I got two questions for you guys.
Yes, sir.
First of all, the classic definition of a market correction is, 10 to 15% drop. But how long does that have to sustain before you really, hey, we're in a market correction? If it bounces 15% in a day or even a week and then comes back up,
this is a good question.
That's a clear.
And here's why I think it's a good question, because like you said, the definition of a market correction is, so we put these terms on
labels.
Yeah. So we say, well, if the stock market or any market for that matter goes down by 10%, we call that a correction. If it drops 20%, we call that a bear market for whatever reason. That's just what it's called.
And the question is, how long does it have to stay in the negative 10 to be a correction or the negative 20 to be a bear? And it could be
it could
moment.
Be weeks.
It could be one trade.
Yeah, we certainly saw this fall a short. I mean, we saw the market go into a correction. Some were saying it's going to become a bear market. Look out. And the next thing you know, things rallied back relatively quickly. And who knows what the future is going to be.
But the answer to the question is it could be one trade. It could be in the S&P 500 or the whatever you're looking at or the Dow. Remember, there's lots of different indexes out there, not just the Dow Jones Industrial Average. So to that question, the question is, why does it matter?
Well, I think if your question is, Gary, when we go into a correction, how long does it take before it recovers or what's typical?
Not so much when it recovers. It's just, you hear the pundits, oh, we're in a correction, but, it's a matter of volatility. And I'm all cool on the ups and downs and all that.
I'm just curious
if it's down to 10 to 15% for a month or 3 months or 6 months or a year, does that define, hey, we're in a correction?
No. It's immediate.
Anything less is just volatility.
It's just one trade. It could be 1 second.
Yeah, so it's when we hit 20%, now it's a bear market. Otherwise, it's in a correction. It could be a prolonged correction, one that never seems to recover. But the label would still be correction until someone came up with some new sort of label. But I must say, we've got on our website,
And then I know you have another question, but on our website.
We just put together this webinar on, what did we call this thing, Pat?
Let market gyrations wreck your retirement.
It talks about
volatility.
It's a 15-minute webinar that goes through, I think you'll find it valuable, because it goes through over the last 50 or so years, what other downturns we've seen in the broad U.S. stock market. So what other corrections we've had, what bear markets have we had, how long they typically lasted. We can see which ones were the greatest, which ones were the simplest. And I think it's actually quite informative. And we put it together because with this volatility, we all like it when the markets go up. That's the fun part. It's when they go down, nobody likes that. And it's always a little unnerving. And every time that happens, you flip on the TV and there's someone there telling you why it's time to get out. That sort of thing. This just helps put things in perspective. So I would encourage you to go to our website and download that 15-minute webinar. I think it would really be helpful for you.
Now, Gary, you had a second question for us.
I do. And I've been following you guys for years and called in from time to time. And I break my portfolio down the way you guys suggest with the 60, 40, 30, large stock, mid stock, small, foreign, and all that type of stuff. And my question is specifically on my foreign component, which is about 15% of my portfolio right now.
Okay.
I've got choices that call them emerging markets, and I have foreign, and a couple are indexes that aren't and others aren't. So what's your preference? Emerging markets or foreign, is there really a difference? And do you think it might be worthwhile to make that a little heavier than the 15% I'm running in there right now?
Oh, how old are you?
This is a great question.
I am 48.
Oh, you got a
great, great question, by
so,
the way.
If you are one that likes to be a little contrarian and try to take advantage where there are what would seem great buying opportunities, then you would say both A, go more into foreign, and B, go into emerging markets. Now, having said that, that doesn't mean that over the next 5 years they're necessarily going to outperform U.S. stocks. It just means that from a valuation standpoint, that's the better buy right now because the risk is greater there right now. There's much greater uncertainty there than there is even in the U.S. market. So for someone who says, look, I got a long-term approach, maybe it's time to overweight in that area, I could say yes. It's certainly for a 48-year-old, you can certainly say, I'm gonna overweight a little more heavily in foreign today than I normally otherwise
would. And what
would
overweighting, so if his normal, his neutral weighting in foreign was 15%, what would an overweighting look like?
Maybe 20%.
Maybe 20%.
So maybe a little, maybe 35 to 40% of your equity exposure.
So the answer to the question which is you asked, is emerging markets the same as foreign? Kind of.
They're foreign.
They're foreign, but they're emerging markets. They're not developed economies. And they have their own set of risks that aren't necessarily that of just investing in foreign. Because in foreign, you have lots of risk anyway, right? You have currency risk. You have company risk. You have political risk.
But it's pronounced
Emerging markets has even more of those types of
risks. Absolutely.
So I wouldn't the foreign fund that you have may actually be holding emerging markets to begin with.
I wouldn't have any more than a third of my foreign holdings in emerging markets.
But I'd make sure that the foreign fund I was holding didn't own emerging markets to begin with before I put a third of those in. So some foreign mutual funds own quite a bit of emerging markets. Some do not. It just depends on the particular fund.
I got to dig a little to find out.
That is correct.
They intersect, but we just don't know how big that Venn diagram is at that point.
Thank you.
Exactly. Yeah. Thank you.
Very good. That helps. Great, guys.
Hi, Gary.
You have a great show. This is if people realize how valuable this information is every week, you have a gazillion listeners, which I'm sure you probably have a gazillion plus one. But you do a great job, and we appreciate it.
And I have one question for you, Gary. Do you get our weekly email or mark it up?
I don't think I get the email, but I hit your podcast every week. It's awesome.
Go to moneymatters.com and then sign up for the weekly email as well.
I will do that.
Because we'll have webinars on there. We'll have articles that we write. And we'll do, what the heck's going on here? Sorry, my phone's flying on.
And we'll do other things that are of interest to our clients. So appreciate the call.
Yeah.
Thank you, guys.
All right. Stick around for more Hanson McLean.
To be part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters, call now at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-242-6766.
Hanson McLean Advisors is dedicated to helping people make wise choices with their money. From the time Scott and Pat started the firm until today, they've been committed to see to it that people arrange their finances in such a manner as to provide some element of financial peace in their lives. All the financial professionals at Hanson McLean Advisors are credentialed and well-versed in areas that range from investments and risk management to taxes and debt reduction. The approach taken by Hanson McLean Advisors is one of financial planning, meaning the advisors take the time with each client to help map out a strategy before they offer any solutions. Their fee-based investment accounts are designed to be transparent and liquid, so you never have to guess what's going on under that hood. There are no commissions when products are changed or when rebalances take place, and there's a high level of communication, keeping you informed and up to date. With offices and meeting locations throughout Northern California, come and see how Hanson McLean Advisors can be a benefit to you. Contact them at 1-888-2-HANSON or at moneymatters.com.
Advice without an agenda. It's back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean.
On this Halloween. And we will get to, we talked about before, about figuring out what assets we should have in retirement plans, 401ks and IRAs, what assets we should hold outside.
Yes.
We can have our stocks inside, our bonds. We'll talk about that in a moment. But first, let's take a call here from Roseanne. Roseanne, welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Hi, so this is Rosanna, and I have a question. First, I opened up a trust fund account for my daughter 15 years ago. It was an all-cap growth fund.
Okay.
And last year, we transferred it to her name.
How old is she now?
22.
Okay.
And now it had it had 43,000. And then now, I just checked it, it has 47,000 now.
Oh, good.
We haven't added anything. So I would like to know, what advice can you give me to make that money work for her, to her advantage? What else can I do?
So this is, you probably have a lot of embedded capital gains in this particular fund.
In other words, it's worth 47, but you paid much less than that over the years.
Yeah, so your cost basis is probably
maybe 15.
Relatively low.
15 years ago?
18, around 22.
22,000 you put in.
Okay.
Right. 22,000. Right.
So your cost basis is relatively low. And because it's relatively low, the first thing I would stop is...
So your daughter's 22. Is she working or is she a student?
She's working and also going to school.
Okay. Does she get any sort of student aid, financial aid, loans or anything?
No, she cannot. She's not available for that because of my salary.
Okay. And so she doesn't need the money in the near future, correct?
When we talked about it, she wanted it to be just leave it there for her the future, just in case she would need it. Probably to buy a house. As long as I can afford to help her with her education, I'll do that.
Okay. So here's
it might be fine just to leave it where it is.
I think it's probably there, but I would stop the dividends and capital gains reinvestment, and I'd buy the S&P 500 with it just because it's more tax efficient.
Or depending on – here's what you really need to do. It's the end of this year, right? We're in the fourth quarter. Do a little tax projection. Look what her income taxes are going to be this year. She could probably sell off some of this and avoid any capital gains because her income's so low. Let's say she sold off $5,500 worth. Then take that $5,500 and put it into a Roth IRA. How much earnings does she have? Will she have this year?
Probably around $5,000.
Okay, so she can contribute up to the maximum amount she earns into a Roth IRA. The reason I'm saying that, she's right now she has zero taxes. So you have an opportunity,
right.
And it's in her name,
to take advantage of selling a capital asset, realize a gain on it, but you'll have no taxes due because her income is so low that she'll have zero at a zero rate. Then take those dollars in a Roth, even if you were in the same fund in the Roth, which I wouldn't recommend the same fund, but if you were, now it's all going to be tax free if she leaves it to retirement time. She could always grab her original deposit out without any tax consequences. So if it were my daughter. That's exactly what I
like
do.
That idea, Scott. So do you use a tax preparer? Someone who does your income taxes? Who does your income tax return?
Yes.
So you need to just give this to your tax.
So here's what we're thinking about doing. We're thinking about selling $5,000 of this and putting it into the Roth IRA. What would that do to her taxes? Can you please do a little tax analysis this year? Assume her income is going to be $5,000.
Perfect. I like the idea. And I'd stop the dividends and capital gains reinvestment.
I also have a CD for her under her name.
How big is the CD?
I think it's around $5,000.
Perfect.
I'd leave that where it is in case she's got some need for something.
Yeah, but I like Scott's idea. So you want to liquidate whatever the accountant tells you to liquidate and fund a Roth IRA up to 100% of her income, not to exceed $5,500.
That's right.
All righty.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rosanna.
Right. Glad you called. And that's the kind.
That is just good financial planning, Scott. Because I was addressing a different issue altogether.
You would have got around to it.
I know I would have.
Because you would have.
I know I would have.
I mean,
as we questioned the client, you found out that the daughter's working, and in my mind, I think, she's a college student, she's not working, but she's working.
Yeah. So you can contribute to an IRA or a Roth IRA. The maximum amount you can contribute for 2015 and 2016, by the way, those numbers have not changed for retirement plans for next year. The maximum you can contribute is $5,500 into an IRA or 100% of your earnings, your wage earnings or wage or self-employment earnings. So that means that if you earn $4,200, that's the maximum amount you can contribute is $4,200. Same thing with the 401k. You can't exceed 100% of your income. And it's $18,000 is how much you can contribute into a 401k, assuming it has a payroll deduct. So that's the...
pretty easy.
Yeah. And it's...
But...
This sort of thing is what you need to look at for either... If you have a period of time in your life, when let's say you've got a year where you're not working, just happens, it's during times like that, they're typically phenomenal opportunities for some tax planning, for Roth conversions, for taking advantage of some capital gains somewhere. Just even sometimes it's just tax arbitrage where you're making some small change somewhere. I mean, it's really the best time to do it.
Sometimes you just sell stuff when your income's low and reposition the portfolio.
And reposition because
whether you need the money or not.
That's absolutely correct. So we had mentioned if you're looking at your own retirement and you've got money in a retirement plan and you have money outside of a retirement plan, which asset should you have in the retirement plan and which asset should you have outside of the retirement plan?
Now, the danger in doing this is you're going to compare the two plans to each other.
So Pat and I had no discussion about this ahead of time, but it's exactly where I was going to go with things. So it's where you're headed.
The danger in doing this is that you're going to, let's say you had $100,000 in your 401k and $100,000 in your brokerage account, or $100,000 in an IRA, $100,000 in a brokerage account, you're going to have a tendency to compare those returns to each other.
Because that's just what happens.
It's human nature.
If you were able to step back and say, I'm going to view my portfolio as one, and I'm not going to look at them side by side.
I'm not going to compare them to each other.
Then you're going to want to follow the plan that we're going to be discussing. If you don't do that, and I must state,
most people, we do it for our clients all the time, and they try to compare the portfolios to each other, and you have to say, No. There's a tax strategy here.
We look at
the big picture.
To be frank, there are some clients that will say, after having much discussion with them, we might say, well, let's just make sure we have the proper allocation in each portfolio because I realize that they're
going to compare them all the time and they're going to ruin the strategy.
They're going to ruin the strategy because they'll ruin the strategy. They'll complain so much until I make some change, which won't be in their best interest.
We normally fight the clients on it. But we, too, are human.
You beat me enough. I'm going to finally succumb. Great.
So here's how you do it. So think about the benefits that the government gives you right now on capital gains versus ordinary income.
And the benefits they give you on retirement plan accounts, how the taxation works there, and on qualified dividends.
Correct.
Which qualified dividends are typically what companies pay. They have a special tax treatment. They're essentially taxed about the same as capital gain tax. So if you're thinking about that for a minute, well, everything that comes out of my retirement account is going to be taxed as ordinary income.
Regardless of how the income was derived inside the retirement account.
Taxed as ordinary income. Everything that comes as an interest from a bond is going to be taxed as ordinary income.
Okay.
Right, so we know those two are going to be taxed as ordinary income. Granted, U.S. government treasuries are free from state income tax. We'll throw that aside for a second. So the taxes, both taxes, ordinary income. Let's say if you have a diversified portfolio where you have some, let's say the S&P 500 index fund, some fund that mirrors the index. If you have that fund on the outside of a retirement plan, it's going to grow somewhat tax efficiently because it's going to have mostly capital appreciation. It'll have some capital appreciation in good years, obviously.
Some little bit of dividends, a little bit of capital gains distribution.
A couple percent of dividends that are taxed favorably as qualified.
Correct.
And capital gains tax treatment down the road. So if you think about what those kind of assets that have favorable tax treatment today, real estate does.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why we're not big fans of having real estate held inside IRAs.
Well, that's one of the reasons.
One of the reasons. Real estate. And index funds, stock index funds, have good favorable tax treatment.
So?
Bonds do not have favorable tax treatment. Taxed as ordinary income. Retirement plans are taxed as ordinary income.
So?
All things being equal, caveat with that, all things being equal, you'd want to have your fixed income inside your retirement account.
Your bond portion of the portfolio.
And your equities, those growth things, outside of your retirement.
And manage those tax efficiently.
Yes. That's ideally in a perfect world. Having said those things, a couple things to consider. Let's say you're retired today and you have a certain amount of income that you're pulling from a retirement account and a certain amount of income you're pulling from other assets. Well, we need to take that in consideration because you don't want to have to be forced to either sell stocks in a down market or sell real estate in a down market. And you don't want to be forced to have to take more out of a retirement account and have that taxes or near income. So a little more careful planning needs to come into place as we get close to retirement and as we're in retirement. But assuming, set that aside, assuming that we can look at our portfolio all as one and not look at it side by side like it's a horse race, but look at it all as one, we'd want to have our those high income producing things inside the retirement account and the high capital gain producing assets outside the retirement account.
And that's why it makes a lot of difference what assets you hold where.
Yep.
So Scott, before we leave, I do want to remind the listeners that we have a new webinar on our website, moneymatters.com, moneymatters.com. It's called Don't Let Market Gyrations Wreck Your Retirement. And it's a brand new webinar that we have posted this week.
And we've had hundreds of downloads or something the last time we just sent it out.
Oh, yeah. We sent it out to
people who have subscribed to our clients, obviously.
That subscribe to our weekly
update. And if you haven't been to moneymatters.com lately, you can get our weekly update and more information. And, of course, this radio program we broadcast from 8 to 9 on KGO in the Bay Area and from 10 to 11 on KFPK in Sacramento. And you can always get it at a podcast at moneymatters.com. So we've certainly enjoyed being with you. Watch out for the ghosts and goblins as you're out trick-or-treating tonight, and we'll see you next week. This has been Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean Advisors. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific financial advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor or conduct your own due diligence.
Planning, saving, and transitioning into retirement isn't as easy as it used to be. Interest rates are low, the financial markets are volatile, and pensions aren't what they used to be. Have you saved enough? Will your investments last you until your dying day? Are you on the right track? If you are asking yourself any of these questions, you could really benefit from meeting with the Hanson McLean Financial Advisor. At Hanson McLean Advisors, they use a unique 7 personal decision points process that can help you evaluate what steps you should be considering to keep you on a path to your ideal retirement. A meeting with one of their financial advisors will look at topics such as how much income your investments could produce, how to maximize Social Security benefits, methods to reduce income taxes, and more. So come into one of their Northern California offices to meet with one of their credentialed advisors and see how Hanson McLean Advisors may help get you to the place you want to be financially. The place you need to be financially. Contact Hanson McLean today at 1-888-2-HANSON or visit moneymatters.com. That's moneymatters.com.